So what keeps public health experts awake at night? These days it could be a lot. Bioterrorism, for one thing, the public health impacts of the current refugee crises and mass population movements for another. Then there's the impact of global climate change on disease patterns. Joining us now to talk about these very important issues are Dr. Alex Garza, who oversaw the nation's health and security efforts as Chief Medical Officer for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security from 2009 to 2013. Today he serves as Associate Dean for Public Health Practice and a professor in epidemiology at the St. Louis University College of Public Health and Social Justice. Dr. Garza is a graduate of the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and was just honored Thursday as the university's 2016 Alumnus of the Year. And Dr. Garza, welcome and congratulations.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. And back with us again is Dr. Rex Archer. He's director of the Kansas City Health Department. And as it turns out, Dr. Garza used to work in KC's Health Department. Rex, always good to have you too. Welcome.
Well, it's great to be back, Steve. And it's great to have hired Alex at one point early in the career, so I was lucky.
So you're responsible for all this.
No.
Good for you, Rex.
I learned a lot from Alex, too.
Well, Dr. Garza, you know something about disasters. You've dealt with the H1N1 pandemic, the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, and the Haiti earthquake. You know, what keeps you up at night thinking about bad things that could happen to this country?
Sure. So I always make this joke that these are two separate questions. So what keeps me up at night is usually my children or hockey games. But things that I worry about are what you just explained. And so it really depends on how the world is evolving and what the current threat picture is. And so it can be anything from chemical weapons that we know are in Syria to any new intelligence information that comes down the pike saying these people are worried about this, all the way up to the president's nuclear security strategy, where we have evidence that there was insiders working within the Belgian nuclear facilities that were members of ISIS. And so loose nuclear material is also a big concern.
Well, you used to have access to some of this briefing material. I mean, does it sort of linger with you in terms of threats that are out there that so many of us aren't even aware of?
Well, it certainly makes you, I think, more aware of what's going on in the world. And different things that you think about whenever, you know, you're doing simple things like traveling or other sort of everyday things. But the picture changes so rapidly when it comes to security that, you know, one day you're dealing with a natural disaster such as the Joplin tornado or the oil spill or something along those lines. And the next day you're getting a phone call from your intelligence people going, hey, we have some intelligence about somebody trying to create, and this is no joke, trying to surgically implant improvised explosive devices in people and then putting them on planes. And so then they need your expertise on how can we defeat this.
Dr. Archer, what keeps you up at night as you look here more locally at Kansas City?
Well, there are similar things. There's no question that we have all hazards approaches to general kinds of disasters, whether that's tornadoes or flash floods. But short of the so-called backpack nuke exploding in Kansas City, there's nothing that can cause as many deaths and disrupt things as much as a biological event, whether that's intentional or Mother Nature.
And a biological event meaning things like what?
Well, any kind of an attack that might be used by something that has been weaponized and is being spread, whether that be anthrax or another organism, but also Mother Nature. You know, the draft was stopped in World War I because of the influenza pandemic, and those kinds of things can really stress a system.
How prepared are we for a bioterrorism attack, Rex? What do you see out there in terms of Kansas City's readiness? And then I'll ask Alex the same thing.
Well, it's actually interesting. We're celebrating our 150th year here, and the first city physician was hired because of rapid population growth here in Kansas City. After the Civil War, we had the northern migration of slaves, former slaves, and then we also have the railroads. And that population growth created outbreaks of diseases, and so the first city physician was set up for quarantine issues and pest houses. When I came back to the city 17 and a half years ago, Ken Alibek, who was former deputy of the bioweapons program in the Soviet Union, had published his book, and we started raising issues and concerns. Kansas City's been on the forefront of leading national efforts on this, and the CDC even had Dr. Joe Wackerly and I come down back in 99 to comment on their strategic plan for mm-hmm. these issues. So it's been a constant work. Dr. Garza actually led a response here in Kansas City when Katrina hit, and we had, 40, how many kids?
Yeah, 40 to 50 kids.
40 yeah. to 50 kids that were brought from New Orleans up here and landed at downtown airport, and we had to get over to Children's Mercy Hospital. And so that response, we've been training and getting better at this by probably 10 to 15% every year. Unfortunately, since 2006, the funding actually has gone down, so the number of people to actually do the response is going down. So I would say intellectually we're much better prepared, but we actually don't have the arms and legs to handle more than two or three minor outbreaks at one time.
You know, Dr. Garza, I do get the impression from reading about all this that at the end of the day, on a nationwide level, when it comes to bioterrorism, some sort of release of viruses or toxins into the population at large, that we're really not ready. Am I right?
Yes and no. And so, yes and no. So I'll put it to you this way. So there's many federal programs out there designed to do protection for bioterrorism and other weapons of mass destruction. And some of those are very large. I ran some of those at Homeland Security. But I'll say on the no side, though, is because funding for public health has been decreasing over really the past 5-6 years. And we know at the federal level that it's going to be the locals that are going to burden. It's going to shoulder the burden. And unless they're well-prepared and ready and well-resourced, it's going to be difficult.
And what's your assessment? Are the locals well-resourced?
I think they could be better resourced is what I think.
You're smiling as you say that, but in all seriousness,
Correct. We have
an issue here.
Right. And it's not just, I think, for I try not to just pigeonhole it as bioterrorism because, as Rex said, the greatest bioterrorist is Mother Nature by far. And so when we decrease funding for taking care of those everyday things that we have to deal with as far as infectious disease, and you're seeing this now unfold with the Zika virus, right?
Yeah.
And last year was Ebola and the West Nile virus, and we go on and on and on, and these things happen every couple of years, and we all jump through hoops to prepare for the latest infection instead of building this very robust and stable system so that we don't have to ramp up, that we can just handle it as it comes along.
Is that where we should be in your estimation?
Yeah,
There's a front-end way to begin to deal with these calamities as they come down the pike?
Yeah, and to give you an excellent example, mosquito control. So I know I think I was working with Rex when West Nile virus came to North America. Mm-hmm. And appropriately, we increased funding for mosquito control throughout the country. Now, since that time, so that was a big deal, right? Headlines, mm-hmm. all these things going on. Over time, the attention wanes and money for mosquito control goes down. And now all of a sudden, Zika comes back around and we don't have the infrastructure in place, nor do we have really the expertise in place in various places around the country in order to deal with this problem now. So if we had kept the funding levels stable and said, this is a public health issue, vector control, then we wouldn't be jumping through hoops right now.
But we are a nation that responds to emergencies.
We are.
That's sort of how our government works on so many levels, Rex.
Yeah, but you don't decide to wait until the fire starts to hire the firefighters to prepare to put out the fire. And that's the challenge that we have right now. We've lost, over the last few years, 1,000 public health workers per average per state.
Wow.
And in Missouri, we are 50th in funding for public health.
50th meaning in last place, the lowest amount.
We're not last because they include the District of Columbia in that list, so Nevada is actually last.
Mm-hmm.
But it would take another $10.7 million just for us to come up and tie the 49th one. Mm-hmm. So we are that underfunded. It's about $10 million short just for Kansas City, Missouri, if we were getting the average funding that other states do fund for public health. That really is why we're really challenged. When we have a Shigella outbreak, if we then have a measles outbreak on the same time, we're over capacity, and we're even with overtime, we can't really manage those events well. So, yeah, thinking about the magnitude of these kinds of challenges, the other thing that people forget is we have twice as many deaths each year from communicable diseases than we do from homicides. And yet look at the differences in the budgets for police versus public health.
Well, then why can't people like Dr. Alex Garza, when he's serving as the nation's health and security chief medical officer for the Department of Homeland Security, why can't you lobby harder, make a better case, and get Congress to fork over the money? I mean, why has this become so difficult?
Well, I think it's really difficult. So some of the times I think we have a difficult time proving the case. And the reason for that is because a lot of people don't like to focus on preparedness. So they don't like to focus on the before the fact issues. And this, really, that's just a microcosm, I think, of government in general. We usually wait until we're lurching towards a crisis before we pay attention to it.
That's right.
And so, and then the other thing is public health can sometimes be its own worst enemy because we're pretty successful in programs that we do, such as vaccinations, things like that. And so when we do drive disease down through very proactive vaccine campaigns, things like that, then people think the problem has been solved, and it's not solved. And
so there's a sense in this country that people sit back and think, okay, well, the next crisis that comes down the pike, you public health people just go off in a corner and come up with your new shot, your new antivirus, and we'll take care of the whole thing.
Sure, but that takes time and a lot of money. It really does. And so there's this issue called the Valley of Death when it comes to research and development for a vaccine, where unless pharmaceutical companies are guaranteed that they're going to recoup dollars for building a vaccine, they're not going to invest in it. And that's where the government has to step in.
Yeah. What is the plan, Rex? Paint a picture for us, if you would, if this city is a target or struck by a bioterrorism kind of attack. What happens? Just give me some broad strokes here.
Well, parts of that plan we actually aren't going to talk about openly because we're not going to reveal pieces for somebody who might intentionally do something.
Makes sense.
I can talk about our approaches for Mother Nature because obviously Mother Nature isn't deciding to do things differently because of our plans. So we can talk about that a little bit. But it starts off first with making sure that we have communication and what we call public health surveillance, which means that we're monitoring whether people are becoming ill and whether anything is changing that we need to be paying closer attention to.
And you're monitoring that how, Rex?
Lots of ways. Physicians, labs, various providers report to us on a regular basis. We also do active kind of monitoring and checking. We'll check sometimes with schools on absenteeism or other ways of seeing whether something's going on. Our ambulance system charts those calls, and we can see if there's a blurb outside of normal ranges for that time of the year. So any of those can trigger us to then start looking at a little bit more care of whether something unusual is going on.
I want to turn, we just have a few minutes left. I want to turn Dr. Garza to something else that you have some knowledge about, and that's the public health impacts of the current refugee crises and these mass population movements that we're seeing sweep Europe right now. What are the consequences of that? What are we seeing in the wake of all that?
Yeah, so from the public health point of view, whenever you have mass migration of people, you're always at an increased risk for disease spread and for other bad things happening, such as, you know, rape, kidnapping, assaults, all of these things that go along with that. But particularly concerning is communicable disease, because you're taking people out of their households. They don't have access to clean water, to medicines, and then you bring them all together in a very concentrated area, and it just sets up a perfect nidus for disease spread. And so some of the, and we saw this in the United States too, 3 or 4 years ago when we had this large influx of the unaccompanied children coming up from Mexico. What people didn't realize is that one of the biggest challenges of that population was because they weren't vaccinated against the chickenpox. And so our Customs and Border Patrol agents would pick these children up, and they were children, and bring them back to the stations and house them there. And the stations are more like city jails, more so than anything. And one child comes in with chickenpox, and this is now a very densely populated group of children, and then they all start getting chickenpox, and pretty soon we have to shut down a border patrol station because of the spread of infectious disease, and that impacts the security of the country.
What are we seeing in Europe right now because of the Syrian refugee crisis?
Right. I haven't seen any one disease in particular, but it could be anything of a multitude of disease, anywhere from GI bugs all the way up to things like measles and things like that.
What about the mental health aspects of this mass migration? You've mentioned some ramifications here, rape, robbery, you know, mm-hmm. assault, those kinds of things. So many of these folks have experienced trauma of one kind or another. Are we addressing that?
I think in small pieces we are, but certainly we have not experienced this large of a movement of people across Europe in decades. And so the resources to provide for all of that care are just not there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe they're doing the best that they can with what they have. But you're absolutely right that these are very traumatic events for these people. I mean, you really have to think about what would motivate somebody to leave their home, to go on a very treacherous journey, many of them with young children, to get in boats, to go across large bodies of water just to escape the terrorism that they're experiencing in their hometowns. It's got to be an incredibly difficult situation.
You know, Rex Archer, back here in Kansas City, we're hearing more talk nationally, more talk even here in Missouri about the importance of mental health. Are you seeing a changing attitude from our leaders when it comes to the importance of it and actually putting dollars behind that? Or what's been your experience?
We've got a whole range of issues around mental health. One thing that is probably one of the fastest growing bodies of knowledge is what we call intergenerational trauma. So that what's being passed down from trauma of previous generations, and it actually changes the way that our genetic code ends up being expressed. And that intergenerational trauma is affecting all of us, and we can end up either in being victims or perpetrators or feeling that we have to be rescuers, mm-hmm. but we move around between those different cycles. And so mm-hmm. a lot of the violence that we see in this city and in this country is part of this intergenerational violence that has occurred from World War II and from Vietnam that just keeps going because we haven't actually worked to heal that.
How about something even more basic? The way our police department handles folks who are struggling with mental health issues on the streets of Kansas City, has that paradigm begun to shift and change or not?
There's no question that Chief Forte and his senior staff moving down through the organization are re-engineering the way that they do policing and how they understand dealing with folks. And
from your standpoint, is that a positive thing?
Oh yeah. I mean, they're doing that on purpose because as the science is obvious that we can't lock our way out of these problems, we have to be more effective at actually treating the problem and or preventing it. And yes, we actually, the city council and the city have moved forward to create this center so that we can actually have police drop them off there as opposed to taking them to the jail where they actually will be getting better care and determine whether they still then need to go on to an emergency room or some other type of inpatient facility. But mm-hmm. there'll be the police officers have a lot to learn and they can't be full-time mental health therapists also.
Yeah. Dr. Garza, we haven't talked yet about the impact of global climate change on disease patterns. And I'm wondering if we're seeing an increase of diseases like, you know, like malaria, for instance, because of global climate change.
Probably more so. Not necessarily malaria for the United States, but certainly the Zika virus is probably front and center right now. And that's because it's carried by a particular type of mosquito, the Aedes aegypti mosquito, that likes warm climates, right? It doesn't survive in cold climates. And so it's gradually been working its way northward in the United States. And it's a carrier of multiple different diseases as well, not just Zika. And so those are all things that we concern about, but it's unquestionable that climate change has played a role in disease patterns. We're now seeing other vector-borne diseases show up in different parts of the United States that we had never seen before. And because we're creating an environment where these insects can now survive where they couldn't before.
But no question, we're going to see the pattern shifting here as global climate change becomes more prevalent, more prominent. Yeah. You know, it's just interesting having you both in here today talking about bioterrorism, the threats to public health around the world. Ted Koppel was on the show a few months ago talking about the potential threat to our electric grids. And if something, a terrorist would strike those, it just strikes me there's so much reason to be fearful these days, as maybe programs like this are responsible for some of it. You know, as we talk about these very important issues and the potentialities here of one mass calamity after another happening, you leave these segments and you're just sort of shaken a little bit. And I'm wondering, help me here. Give me something to hang my head on here this weekend.
That would be the worst thing that would happen if we were to end this. Fear is a mind killer. It often leads people to either fight or flight or some freeze or some inappropriate response. Talking about the reality of things and that we can do better and that we can change, we have a lot of infrastructure that needs to be reinvested in this country and built back up. We can save lots of lives through disease prevention that would also then be able to do double duty. You know, a hammer doesn't have just the head and the claw. Both of them are on the hammer. It's dual use. All these things in public health, we actually have good data to show. We get $5, $6, $7 return on investment for everything we spend. If we were investing more, we'd actually have a healthier population, and we can turn this around.
Alex, what would you add to all this and helping me cope with being nervous about one thing or another?
Sure. So we always talk about risk when we're talking about different issues impacting the United States. And so at a very large level, we have to think about what are those particular things that are a high enough threat where we're vulnerable and where the consequences are going to be large. So that's what we think about. And by and large, most of these things we are not at high risk for. However, we have to plan for them. Mm-hmm. And because if we don't, then we're at peril. I agree with what Rex is saying, though. And so we use this word called resilience, right? And part of that is it's not just one single thing that's going to eliminate the issue. It's a combination of things, whether that is improving infrastructure, like you said, with the electrical grid, I would say even roads and highways, improving public health infrastructure. All of these things make the community more resilient so that if something bad does happen, we're able to bounce back quicker and more effectively.
Well, let's leave this.
Our wisdom literature, our sacred texts, one of the most frequent quote is, be not afraid. Because if we are afraid, we're not able to cope to do what we need to do. So, respecting these challenges is one thing, but becoming fearful or painting others and trying to say we should be scared of them, that doesn't help.
Let's leave this conversation on that note then. I want to thank Dr. Alex Garza again, who once was Chief Medical Officer for the Department of Homeland Security. Today he's with St. Louis University. Dr. Rex Archer with the Department of the Health Department, Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you all both for a very good conversation. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Steve.